You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here. And today, Bishop George Packard is going to be with us in our second hour. He is the Episcopal bishop who was arrested at Duarte Park while he was the guy who was negotiating with Trinity Church for Occupy Wall Street. So we'll get into that. And Steve Justino is going to be here with Move to Amend. And a lot of news, a lot of things to cover. However, we're also, today is Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us, and he will be taking your calls throughout the hour, 866-987-THOM and 866-745-2667. We're doing Brunch with Bernie a day early. Yes, we are live on the air right now. And so, Bernie, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you, as always. It's the end of the year. Well, arguably next week is the end of the year, but we're awful close to it. I'm curious what your thoughts are on the high points and low points and even right now points. What's going on?
Well, it's been a really strange and difficult year for the American people. Economically, as every listener knows, our country continues to be battered. Unemployment is, we get used to it, Tom. Because we keep talking about these numbers, but real unemployment, counting those who have given up looking for work, people are working part-time, it's over 15%. That's just an extraordinary number. You got just an incredible number of young people, high school graduates, college graduates, who are, excited about starting their careers, getting out, making some money, not able to do that, staying home with their parents, and that's a terrible way to begin your career. You got old people who are seeing some serious poverty problems, constant attacks against Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the entire safety net that exists in this country. And I think actually one of the promising and exciting aspects of the last year has been the role that the Occupy Wall Street movement has played, and I think educating the American people about the very, very important issue of growing income and wealth disparity in this country. This is an issue I've been talking about for a very long time. But I got to say, I think because of the Occupy Wall Street effort, the media was forced to pay more attention just in the last 6 months than I think in the last 10 years. And that is whether or not a nation can survive when so few have so much and so many have so little. When you got 400 people, wealthiest people in this country, owning more wealth than the bottom half of America. Forget the morality of that. Economically, is that sustainable? And I think more and more people are saying, no, it's not. Something wrong. If people down below don't have any money to buy products, they're not going to create jobs, and the economy is going to continue to remain in very, very bad shape. You have, for the middle class, the continued decline. Median family income is down $3,000. Compared to where it was 10 years ago. As we speak, you're looking at millions and millions of workers working longer hours for lower wages. Probably the saddest part of that whole thing is seeing older workers, people 50, 55, 60, who have lost their jobs, then getting another job that pays them 25, 50% less than the job that they had for years. Not a great way to end up your working career. And then you got others who it has dawned on them, they may never find another job in their lives. I imagine being 55, preparing to work to your 65, thinking you're going to do that, put away some nest egg for your retirement, and then suddenly at the age of 55, it's all over. So that's just, that's what's going on in the economy. I think environmentally what we're seeing is just a huge silence with regard to global warming. What the scientists tell us is that they underestimated the dangers of global warming in terms of drought, in terms of flood, in terms of extreme weather disturbances. Hardly a peep in Congress, an issue we're going to be more active on. But let me just talk about some of my thoughts about the role that I intend to play in the next year. Money in politics is maybe at the heart of everything. So long as you have the Koch brothers and these big money guys funding candidates all over the country. You're not going to have a Congress standing up for working families or lower-income people or the middle class. So it is not going to be easy. Let me be very clear about this. But we have to overturn this disastrous Supreme Court 5-4 Citizens United decision and get corporate money out of politics. We need real campaign finance reform so ordinary people representing the middle class can have the opportunity to run for office and not get outspent 100-1 by big money interests. So that's an enormously important issue. We have introduced, along with Ted Deutsch in the House, constitutional amendment to undo the damage done by Citizens United. People can sign our petition on sanders.senate.gov. We have over 105,000 signatures right now. That's a huge issue. Economically, we're going to get back to the issue of Wall Street. I think Occupy Wall Street did a very good job in focusing on the power of Wall Street, on the greed of Wall Street, on the illegal behavior of Wall Street. We can never, ever, ever forget that we are in the midst of this horrendous recession because of the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior on Wall Street. How do you deal with that? It ain't easy. Dodd-Frank took some minor steps forward. We have got to go a lot further than that. I think clearly one of the top issues is to address the fact that you have six large financial institutions, the largest in this country, who have assets equivalent to 65% of the GDP of America, over $9 trillion. Are we comfortable as a nation with six corporations, six financial institutions, having assets equivalent to two-thirds of the GDP of America? I'm not. I'm not from a too-big-to-fail aspect. I think it's quite likely that at some point these guys will go down again and we'll have to bail them out. But in addition to that, the kind of economic power they have when they are writing half of the credit cards, two-thirds of the credit cards in this country and half of the mortgages, that's just too much power. So we're going to be continuing our effort to break these large financial institutions up. In terms of the social fabric of this country, people have become accustomed to understanding that Social Security is there. Social Security has been an enormous success story. Before Social Security, 50% of seniors lived in poverty. Today, that number, while too high, is 10%. And yet, despite the fact that Social Security hasn't contributed a nickel to the deficit and that it can pay off every benefit for the next 25 years because it has a $2.5 trillion surplus, there are savage attacks every single day trying to undermine Social Security in one way or another. And as the chairman of the Defending Social Security Caucus, we have managed, amidst great struggle, I should tell you, to keep the wolves at bay and not to start dismembering Social Security. But that's an ongoing fight. Same thing with Medicare. People want to raise the retirement age to 67. Medicaid, 50 million people in this country have no health insurance. They want to make savage cuts in Medicaid. So we got to defend the social safety net at a time when we're in a great recession, at a time when the middle class is declining. You don't take away the support system that the elderly, the children, the sick and the poor are surviving on. Obviously, in the coming year, we've got to focus on the major economic issue, and that is job creation. How do we create the millions and millions of jobs that we need? And while, in my view, the Democrats have not been anywhere near as strong as they should be, it is very clear that the function of the Republican Party in Congress is simply to represent the wealthiest people in this country and the most powerful. Yeah. So we got to figure out ways, and there are clear ways to do it, rebuilding our infrastructure, transforming our energy system. But we've got to create millions of jobs in the very near future.
Absolutely. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our national town hall meeting a day early. Brunch with Bernie. He'll be back right after this break, about 4 minutes from now. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign the petition for his constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United and say, corporations are people.
Then we observe Christmas Day with all of its memory and all of its meaning, as we should.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
Well, happy holidays. It's the, I believe, the third day of Hanukkah now, and Christmas is coming up this weekend. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Senator Bernie Sanders, our national town hall meeting, a day early. Today is Thursday, and he'll be taking your calls. You're still with us, Bernie?
I'm right here.
Okay, taking your calls right now. Chuck in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening on Sirius XM. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. I want to thank you both for the job you do. It's a wonderful thing to have in a time like this. I wanted to ask Senator Sanders about wind turbines along interstates. I've been thinking about this for a while. It seems to me that if we could start an initiative to bring wind turbines to interstates, that could represent a large closing of the environmental loop of energy use.
Well, Chuck, that's an interesting idea, and I think we should be prepared to invest very significantly in wind, which is a very, very fast-growing technology. So I'm a big proponent of wind. Obviously, you have to place wind where there is wind. There is right now a major effort to build more wind all over this country. People should know, and I think they don't, how fast wind energy has been growing, because Chuck is right. We want to continue to do this. In Texas right now, they have 10,000 megawatts of wind energy. 10,000. That's the equivalent of 10 nuclear power plants in Texas. In Iowa, 20% of their electricity is generated by wind. What worries me in Washington right now is just recently, in terms of the recent negotiations, we have not extended a number of tax credits for renewable energy, wind and solar, which will have a very negative impact on the industry. But to answer Chuck's question, I think we need to be very vigorous in investing in wind in some parts of the country. Wind at 4 or 5 cents a kilowatt is now as cheap as any other form of electricity. The technology is going to bring it down, and I'm a very, very strong proponent of that.
Mark in San Francisco, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, guys. Senator Sanders, I want to ask you, I've heard different things with regard to the Senate filibuster. I've heard that it can only be changed at the end or at the beginning of a new Congress. I've also heard that it could be changed at any time. I've also heard that they need 60 votes in order to change it. I want you to clarify, when can that be modified, or I want it to be eliminated? You know, but what exactly happens with that?
Well, Mark, in a sense, given the nature of a very confusing institution with all kinds of rules, everything you said is true. The filibuster rule, one often looks at the beginning of the session, and there is an argument to be made at the beginning of the session that because the Senate is an ongoing body, that, you know, two-thirds of the members are still there, that at that point you could do away with the filibuster, and there's some people who believe that. On the other hand, the truth is that Congress can do anything it wants at any time. It could do it tomorrow.
With a majority vote, right?
Right. Well, not quite with a majority vote, because the Republicans in this instance will demand 60 votes.
Uh-huh.
So that's why it becomes everything you said, Mark, is true. But here's the bottom line of that discussion. I think there's a lot of concern all over this country about why does it take 60 votes to get anything done. And the reason for that right now is the Republicans are abusing the filibuster process in an unprecedented way. After Obama was elected, the number of 60 votes that were required to pass legislation just went up off the charts compared to past history. So the answer is yes. We do need filibuster reform. There are a number of ideas out there. One of them is that if people want a filibuster, they're going to have to stay on the floor, or at least several of them will have to stay on the floor. You can't just say, I want 60 votes and then disappear, but you're going to have to put some skin into that game, plus some other factors. But Republicans have abused what has historically been used in a very rarely, the 60 vote number, and clearly we have to change that.
Jerry in Lake Pleasant, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, my question question is about the post office. I'm from a small village in Massachusetts where we all get our mail at the post office, and they've been talking about closing it, and we've been fighting that. And now all of a sudden we find out they've delayed the decision until May, and we don't quite understand what's going on. I'm wondering if you could...
Well, Jerry, I'm happy to tell you, because I'm the guy who helped lead the effort to delay the decision to May to give us... here's what you got. The post office now obviously has financial problems for a number of reasons. First-class mail has gone way down because people are now using the Internet. We're in the middle of a recession. That's impacted the post office. But the most important financial problems for the post office are that some years ago, the Congress determined that the post office was going to have to come up with $5.5 billion every year for future health retiree benefits, which is an extraordinarily onerous and unprecedented burden. No other agency of federal government, no other company in the private sector comes anywhere near having to come up with that kind of money in that period of time. So, Jerry, what we did is I sent a letter out, and we have 22 signatures on that letter in the Senate, saying to the post office, delay these cuts. Rural post offices, these small post offices in rural America, as Jerry just indicated, are extremely important to the identity of communities. It's not just mail service. It goes beyond that. That's true in my state, where they have in mind to cut down to eliminate 15 post offices. It's true all over America. So, Jerry, we are trying to fight back. We're making some progress. I'm glad that we have given Congress at least 5 months in order to pass comprehensive postal reform, which I hope will protect those rural post offices.
That's great. That's great news. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Your calls coming up after the break here at the bottom of the hour for Senator Sanders.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign his petition, his constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United.
There are many men and women in America who are asking themselves this Christmas, how can we light our creed? How can we give our gift with love and with uplifted spirit and heart in a world at war?
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Jacob is just a complete Christmas sucker. He's totally in it all. Our associate producer picks out our bumpers. Thank you, Jacob. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, a day early today here. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And in our national town hall meeting, Robert in Jacksonville, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Good wishes for the holidays.
Thank you.
I had a question. I was wondering what your viewpoint was on the American Monetary Act. Apparently would nationalize the Federal Reserve. Just wanted to know what your viewpoints are on it, and do you think it would ever get on the table again?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not familiar with that particular act, but I will tell you that we're working very, very hard on Fed reform. The Fed is perhaps the most important and least known, least understood federal agency that we have. It has incredible power. During the Wall Street collapse, it lent out $16 trillion to every major financial institution in this country and central banks all over the world, wealthy individuals in this country. And we managed to get a provision in the Dodd-Frank bill, which did a GAO audit of all of that, and we learned about it. So there's no question, to my mind, that we need very fundamental reform of the Fed in terms of its structure, who sits on the Fed, including regional Feds, and including what its function is. We saw how aggressive, incredibly aggressive, the Fed could be when it came to protecting the large financial institutions 3 years ago. We need to see an equally aggressive Fed protecting the middle class of this country, and being aggressive in creating the millions and millions of jobs that we need in protecting consumers against very high credit card interest rates, against illegal foreclosure processes with banks. So the issue is, absolutely, we need real Fed reform. We need to democratize it, and we need to make it accountable to the middle class and working families of this country. I put together a task force of some 20 progressive economists who are helping me do that, and in the coming weeks, we'll have more to say about that.
Great. Betsy in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you are on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. Betsy? No, Betsy. Jackie in Port Townsend. You got to listen to your phone, not your radio. Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Happy holidays, and I love you both dearly. I read a post yesterday by Steve Giustino, Move to Amend National Action Coordinator for Occupy the Courts, and he claimed that the wording in your amendment really creates a loophole because you state for-profit corporations. And he points out that Citizens United was a nonprofit corporation. I know in your section one of your article, it says, the rights protected by the Constitution of the United States are the rights of natural persons and do not extend to for-profit corporations, limited liability companies, or other private entities established for business purposes or to promote business interests under the laws of any state, the United States, or foreign state. Could you explain that to me, please?
Well, we went around the block a lot in trying to figure out the best way to go forward. And there is no simple way. I think the main point that we wanted to make at this moment is that it is an outrage and a real attack on American democracy when you have corporations able to go into their own treasuries and spend unlimited sums of money without disclosure on campaigns. This is a real undermining of American democracy. I understand what you're saying about nonprofits. We think that our language, in fact, does protect nonprofits, and it was the best language that we could find at this point.
Phyllis in Los Angeles, you're listening to, or you're on the air, excuse me, with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello?
Phyllis, you're on the air.
You're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. Senator Sanders, I'm asking you because, like Diogenes, I'm looking for an honest man to give an honest answer. I'm calling about the Social Security Fairness Act. This is an act that was supposed to overturn the windfall elimination provision and government pension offset provisions of Social Security that was enacted during the Reagan era. As you know, the windfall elimination provision and government pension offset allows for reduction of Social Security benefits that were earned and paid for by people who may have worked in the public sector for a term and got a small pension. And then when we go to retire, Social Security tells us, oh, you have a public pension, so we're reducing your Social Security. In my case, that my public pension, for example, is $350 a month, but Social Security is reducing me by $300 a month. My family alone has lost $120,000 in benefits, plus a family home, as a result of the failure to enact the Social Security Fairness Act. And I want to know why this has been allowed to continue. Even this year, the House passed the Social Security Fairness Act, but no one in the Senate would put forward a companion bill. For the past 4 years, Social Security Fairness passes both houses, goes to committee, and dies there. and I want to know why.
Well, Phyllis, I apologize. I cannot give you the reasoning why. All that I can tell you right now in terms of Social Security is that there is a tremendous effort on the part of a whole lot of people in the Congress not to strengthen Social Security, not to make Social Security fair, not to do away with loopholes or problems that you and others are being impacted on, but in fact to go very strongly in the other direction, to cut Social Security benefits or in fact to privatize it. So the direction is going in the wrong way, but I will in fact take a look and find out more about the issue that you raised.
I'd be wary about anything that says fairness that was passed by the Republican House.
Yeah, well,
you know, Social Security fairness.
Well, sometimes things are passed with full understanding they're not going to go anyplace.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Michael in Seattle, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I have two questions that are interrelated. The first is, can you tell me why in the world we have 36,000 troops still stationed in Japan, why we have 55,000 troops still stationed in Germany, including 80,000 troops in Western Europe? Apparently, they have the mission of protecting Western Europe now from Eastern European shoppers. And the second half of this question that's interrelated, at the same time, we have 22% of our kids living in poverty. That's a national disgrace compared to 15% in Canada, 12% Germany, 8% France, 3.5% for Finland, and 2.6% in Sweden. And finally, the president promised to raise the minimum wage. Nothing's been done on that front. I think the State of the Union would be a wonderful time to announce that we are going to increase the minimum wage to at least nationally $9 an hour.
Well, Michael, you've given me a mouthful here. Let me start off with the overseas bases that we have. I think your point is well taken.
We have 1 minute, Bernie.
I do not know why we have 55,000 troops in Germany. In many ways, Germany is now a wealthier country than we are. If we are serious about deficit reduction, one way you have to move is by cutting military spending. One of the reasons I voted against the defense authorization bill, one of the reasons, is we continue to spend more money than the rest of the world combined on defense. And I think taking a hard look at overseas bases is one way that we can cut spending. In terms of childhood poverty, you've raised an issue that I've talked about a whole lot. It is enormously important, and it is a national disgrace that this great country has by far the highest rate of childhood poverty. You mentioned some of the countries in Scandinavia. When kids grow up in poverty, the likelihood is that they are, in most cases, many cases, not going to do well in school. They're going to drop out. We have clearly got to address this problem of having almost one quarter of our kids living in poverty at a time when we also have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income.
Very well said. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie, our national town hall meeting. Bernie will be back after this break in about four and a half minutes, taking more of your calls here on the Tom Hartman program. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign his petition to roll back Citizens United. Excuse me, his constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United over there, and also get on his newsletter.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
His newsletter is called The Bernie Buzz. Great information. And his website, sanders.senate.gov, is a great news site in general.
The new year calls for the courage and the resolution of old and young to help to win a world struggle in order that we may preserve all that we hold dear.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Happy holidays, my friends. Today, our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. Bernie, you're still here with us?
I am right here.
All righty. Laura in Dearborn, Michigan. Listening to WHYT? Laura, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. I'm real honored to be talking to you. I have a nagging question about our 2 years ago, the U.S. offered big money relief to Haiti because of their earthquake, and come to find out about a year later that Tom Coburn had held it up with his signature, saying he didn't like the way the money was going to be dispersed. Do you know anything about that, or
somewhere in the back of my mind, I do recall some discussion about that a while back. I think I will not swear to you, Laura. I think that issue may have been resolved, but I will not. I can't guarantee that, but I do recall that discussion. It was a while back, but I certainly hope that that money, as intended, did get to Haiti, a country which desperately needed it.
And still does. Brooke in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, Senator. You are a real inspiration to so many of us. I just want to thank you for that. And my question is, what could be done to get the unemployment metric that the Department of Labor uses modified to include the long-term unemployed
instead
of just categorizing them as not interested in work? Because the current metric is dishonest, and I think it's detrimental to the issue of trust in a government that would use obviously flawed metric to make itself look good.
Well, Brooke, thanks for asking that question. And what he is talking about is, you know, when you pick up the papers and they say, well, unemployment is 8.6%, that is really not true. And there are government statistics itself which tell us that. If you include people who have given up looking for work, say you're in a very high unemployment area and you're not actively searching for work, you're not included in the unemployment statistics. If you're working part-time, when you want to work full-time, you're not included in those statistics. So you're absolutely right. And I think occasionally the media, by the way, I think increasingly is using other numbers. For example, you'll see in the papers unemployment being over 15% when you include those. But we do need to change those metrics. The other area where it is equally important, for example, is determining what poverty is in America. And the metrics we're using there are also totally antiquated and inadequate. So above and beyond social policy about how you deal with unemployment, how you deal with poverty, the truth is the American people should know the reality, and I think in neither case is that currently the situation.
Carol in Portland, Oregon, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Sounds like Carol's picking up her phone very quickly.
No, I'm here.
Yeah, okay, Carol, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you. I don't really have a question, but here's the situation. My husband has been an attorney, is an attorney in the Fulton area, and the only law that we deal with is Social Security disability law. A year ago, last October, the funds to pay for the attorney fees began to decrease. They have decreased to the point over this past year that we are now close to bankruptcy.
Wow.
We've had 10 employees. We've had 3 attorneys. A couple months ago, we had to lay off 4 employees and 2 attorneys. And as of January 13th, this coming January.
So, Carol, I'm sorry, but we only have about a minute and a half left in the show. Is there a quick question in there for Bernie?
I think I got it.
Okay, you got it. Go for it, Bernie.
All right, and I think the answer, Carol, is this is one of many approaches the right wing is using to undermine Social Security. If people do not have legal representation, they're not going to be able to stand up for their rights, and people will not get the benefits to which they are entitled. Furthermore, you're also seeing attacks, significant attacks, and funding cuts to the administration of Social Security. One of the problems that we have here in my office, and I'm sure it's true in every state in the country, is people call and they say, I'm appealing, and it takes forever to get a decision. And that is because, in many ways, Social Security is understaffed. They don't have the people to review the requests that are coming in for action. So you are going to see in a wide variety of ways, whether it's limiting people's ability to defend themselves and get justice in Social Security, or the time it takes for people to adjudicate claims, that is the result of cuts in the administration, if you like, of Social Security, something we've got to vigorously oppose.
Yeah. Bernie, is that because the spending bills originate in the Republican-controlled House and they're just cutting?
Well, these are the demands of the Republicans, and they negotiate. And
yeah.
Sometimes these guys get what they want.
Okay. The final minute here. Thoughts for the new year?
I think everybody knows that these are tough times for the country economically. These are tough times for the country politically. But I think there are some bright spots on the horizon. I think, and the evidence I think is pretty clear in terms of the elections that we saw in Wisconsin, where two Republican state senators were defeated. That's not an easy thing to do. Or more importantly, the results we saw in November in Ohio, where the working people of that state won a huge landslide victory, not only against unfair laws that would limit the ability of public employees to negotiate their contracts, but more importantly, they were taking on big money. And they were saying, it's time for the working class of this country and our state to get some justice. So I think there is a trend going on in America where the 99% is saying to the 1%, enough is enough. And I think that bodes very positively for the coming year.
I absolutely agreed, and so glad that you're there and you're part of it, Bernie. Thanks again for a great year.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much for being with us. Senator Bernie Sanders, again, his website, sanders.senate.gov, where there is a spectacular constitutional amendment.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. We just finished an hour with Senator Bernie Sanders live, as he and I will both be off tomorrow. Well, actually, you know, our show will be here, but it'll be more of a best-of kind of show. And there's a lot going on in the news that I want to get to today, including some information about the Defense Authorization Act, what happens when rich people rob poor people. Hint, hint, they don't go to jail. We'll get into that. What's going on with the U.S. auto industry? Some interesting science on empathy. What's going on with the payroll tax cut and the extension of unemployment benefits that the Tea Party, let's call it the Tea Party tax cut. We'll get to all that in just a few minutes. But George Packard is with us, the retired bishop who was seen famously in the blue. Is it pronounced cassock, sir?
No, it's pronounced cassock, yeah.
Yeah, cassock.
Right.
Okay.
Hi,
Bishop Packard. Thank you very much for joining us. Your website, bishopsnotebook.blogspot.com.
You can find it under Occupied Bishop.
Occupied Bishop?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. As in past tense, occupied?
Yeah, they've occupied me.
Okay. Well, and it's interesting. You and your wife and I talked on television last night, but I don't think our radio audience has had an opportunity to meet you. And I'm kind of reintroducing you all over again. You were at Duarte Park the day that the Occupy movement was trying to occupy the park next to Trinity Church and owned by Trinity Church. You had been negotiating with the rector of Trinity Church, who you knew, for them to get that. And your wife, Brooke, was pretty badly beaten up and tossed by the police into the crowd.
Right.
I'm curious what took you to this moment. I was surprised to hear last night you say that, you know, you're a regular listener to Rush Limbaugh's show. And this,
well,
you know,
I turn him off when he gets a little florid.
I've listened to him for years, too. I'll tell you.
What you said in your intro about the science on empathy, I think it applies here. And I wanted to make this point with you last night. I was a casual observer of Occupy Wall Street, Tom, sort of a member of the 99%, I figured. I think I'm more of an independent than anything else, but uncertain as to where everything was going. And it started with that detention about, I was delivering water and I was detained. And I recall coming home and saying to my wife, and this is what I shared with Sean, your producer, last night. And I said this, if I'm hassled with all this identification, remember I'm former military and I've got all kinds of identification.
And you're dressed as a bishop.
Yeah, well, I was the military bishop, you know,
yeah,
to everybody.
Right.
I bristle with all of this identification. And if I'm hassled, what are the protesters going through? So I was aroused and watchful when my friend Chris Hedges called and asked for help talking to Trinity about Occupy Wall Street using Duarte Park. And then the education of Occupy Wall Street continued, and I discovered an open, engaging, motivated group of young people utterly dedicated to nonviolence and occupying property. So, I mean, it was a gradual evolution for me, and that it turned into finally me vaulting the fence and trespassing on that property. But I certainly didn't start out in that direction. But I'm glad I wound up there in the final moment.
Where do you think we're speaking with Bishop George Packard, who is a retired Episcopal bishop, a military. I didn't realize you were military as well. And arrested at Duarte Park and last weekend, and your wife Brooke was pretty badly beaten up by the police.
Yeah,
and which was horrifying. Well, you described your own evolution from political independent and occasional Limbaugh listener to advocate of the Occupy Wall Street. I don't know what the word is, but you know, advocate of them. How do you think others in the church? I asked this question last night, but we only had about 30 seconds to get into it. We've got 4 or 5 minutes here.
Okay.
I've had this conversation with Chris Hedges, although it's been 6 months. In fact, it was before the Occupy movement had taken off.
Mm.
And he and I both identify ourselves as people of faith, although part of the great unchurched, I suppose you would say.
Yeah, no, I think he's more in the emerging church these days.
Yeah, it seems. So your thoughts on that, please.
Well, I think that as I've started to make reference to last night, prophecy, particularly in the season of Advent, is a very important part of who we are as the church. John the Baptist is referred to all the time, and good preachers will talk about the pictures of John the Baptist pointing not only to the Christ who's coming, but also to the injustice around us. And it's one thing, and here's the rub right now, Tom. The church and religious leaders talk about injustice, but injustice really is for them, it translates into charitable, sedentary work. You take care of the poor, you feed their, you fill their cups of cocoa, and you make sure they have a blanket and so on and so forth. But prophecy, real prophecy, sometimes means, and this is the piece that's tough, of moving through that membrane and acting, just acting, because injustice needs to be faced. Darkness and its ugly face needs to be faced. And that's the thing that quickened me with the Occupy Wall Street friends that I met over the past three, now 4 weeks. They are utterly committed to facing down injustice. That's why they commit themselves utterly to nonviolence, and they commit themselves utterly to occupying and liberating space. Not only in that space do they found a community that resuscitates them after a long day of protest, where they can see each other and get up in the morning and brush their teeth and share coffee and say hello to each other. But it is also, and this is the hard part for me to get my head around, they also use that empty space to put their philosophy. There's a wonderful website called OccupyTheory.org that does better, gives better word description than I can get right now.
Mm-hmm.
But this Occupy space really is the counterpoint to what Wall Street is. Wall Street.
It is the mammon that Jesus spoke of.
Say it again.
It's the mammon that Jesus spoke of, is it not?
Yeah, it represents control of our lives, control of we've given up control, we've lost control, and the 99% do not have control anymore. I mean, you and I, there's a book out, just reading it last night, by Lawrence Lessig, talks mm-hmm. about Republic Lost, where if you don't have the bucks, you're a silent figure in our government. You just have to have the money to participate. That's That's ludicrous. I find that an awful description of our.
So in the minute we have left, Bishop George Packard, how do we, or do you think it's just going to organically happen? How do we reach out to organized religion in particular and say, you know, this is your fight too?
Well, I think you go to your local pastor and demand not only do you speak from the pulpit about this, but you can seek out places in your own town, your own locale where you see the powerless not having control over their lives because they have less money or less power. You point out that the system is rigged so that they can't have participation. In my own town here in Rye, there's a prominent Episcopal church that has a very large rectory that sits like a sort of a monument, a museum.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, that could be opened up for use of homeless and people on Medicaid.
A lot could be
done.
We
just need to activate our work and become the 99% that...
There you go.
That,
Bishop, we're out of time, but thank you.
Yes,
you
sir.
Said it so well. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
OccupiedBishop.com. And I believe it was .org. And bishopnotebook.blogspot.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Happy holidays. Not quite the right music for that. Come on, Jacob. That's what? Oh, occupy the courts. Okay. All right. Of course, it makes perfect sense. Therefore, Steve Justino, the National Action Coordinator and attorney, the co-chair of Colorado's Move to Amend. MoveToAmend.org is the website, and this is MoveToAmend.org/occupy the courts. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom. Great to be on again.
Tell us about Occupy the Courts.
Well, it was a great segue talking about the Billionaires Party and then segueing right into Occupy the Courts. Because Move to Amend, Occupy the Courts truly is a people-driven movement. We the people are going to take back our democracy, and we're going to do it by amending the Constitution so it says clearly and unequivocally that corporations are not people, money is not speech, and our next big action in that step forward is Occupy the Courts on January 20, 2012. We are doing a one-day protest, a one-day of action in front of federal courts across the country, Tom. Last time I was on this show, we had 38 cities that are participating in Occupy the Court. Today, we have 73 cities across the United States that are going to have democracy advocates out in front of their federal courts on January 20th.
Right, and on that day, we're still trying to figure out how we're going to do the logistics of it, but I may be broadcasting live from there, and if not, Cornell West and I are going to be occupying the Supreme Court. And on behalf of this, and then I'm going to boogie over to Families USA and do the rest of my show from there. But,
well, and that time, there's actually been a change in that lineup. Dr.
Okay.
West is conflicted out of the Supreme Court because he's not going to be in Washington.
Okay.
But we're so big now that we just said, well, tell us where Dr. West is going to be, and we'll plug him into an action anywhere in the country where he is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be in Gainesville, Florida. So now Gainesville, Florida, Occupy the Courts, is going to have Dr. West keynoting their address.
That's great. So he's going to occupy the federal courthouse in Gainesville, and I'm going to occupy the Supreme Court.
He is, and you're going to be with David Cobb, who you know.
Yep.
Annabelle Park from the Coffee Party is going to be there.
Yep.
Dr. Jill Stein, the 2012 Green Party presidential candidate, is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
We just have so many exciting things going across the country, Tom. Like, this is succeeding beyond my wildest imagination.
That's great. And if to our viewers and listeners, if you live in a city, A, if you want to just show up, or B, if your city is not on the list over at movetoamend.org/occupythecourts, If your city's not on the list, you can be the person who puts this thing together.
Absolutely. Tom, can I tell you a couple of the things that we just got going on around the country?
Sure. And by the way, just let me restate. This is going to be on January 20th at noon Eastern time or noon in each time zone?
Whatever the local organizers decide on, we're not telling people what they need to do.
I see. Okay.
So check our website for the court nearest you to find out the particulars of that.
Right.
Or as you said, sign up to be an Occupy the Courts organizer if there's not one at a federal court near you.
Right.
But in Philadelphia, for example, and they're going to be starting at Independence Hall, and they're going to be marching from Independence Hall to the federal courthouse. In Boston, they're going to be starting at Griffin's Wharf, and where the Boston Tea Party took place.
Right.
They're going to be marching to the federal courthouse. In San Jose, California, they're going to be starting across the street from the old federal courthouse where the Santa Clara County Railroad case was originally tried.
Uh-huh.
So there's just so much historic significance to what's going on. People are having fun with this idea. They're really getting into it. And I just think it's going to be a wonderful day for democracy.
That is marvelous. We're talking with Steve Giustino. He's an attorney, the National Action Coordinator, Occupy the Courts. I'll be occupying the Supreme Court at noon Eastern time here in Washington, D.C. on the 20th of January. There will be, it's going to be, as Steve just said, whatever the local group says, wherever it is, whatever time it is, you got to check it out over at movetoamend.org/occupythecourts. And Steve, why Occupy the Courts?
Well, Tom, it's because the courts are the root of the problem. That's where the problem has come. The Supreme Court and the federal courts, the smallest, most unaccountable branch of the government, has been giving away human constitutional rights to corporations one by one ever since that Santa Clara County case until now, when corporations have every single right that you and that I and that all of your listeners have, and that's just wrong. And they're using it to run roughshod over our democracy, and we the people are standing up and saying no. So focusing on the courts just makes sense to us because the courts are the root cause of the problem.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court actually, you know, all of the courts operate basically the way Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution says that the Supreme Court should act, which is as the courts of last appeal. But the Supreme Court, as a result of their own decision in 1803 in Marbury versus Madison, has taken upon itself the power to strike down laws made by Congress and to basically create doctrine out of whole cloth. This whole doctrine of corporate personhood, it was invented by the Supreme Court, and this doctrine of money as speech invented by the Supreme Court. So
they're just killing our democracy. Those two doctrines, those court-created rules of law, have taken away our fundamental right to enlightened self-government.
Yeah,
and
we need to be reaching out. I had this conversation a year ago on this show with Phyllis Schlafly, of all people. She wrote a book back 20 years ago about how judicial supremacy and judicial review are both unconstitutional. And I think people on the left and the right, regardless of political perspective, you should be alarmed about the fact that corporations, whether they're profit-making corporations, not-for-profit corporations, whatever they may be, that they have rights under the Constitution. I mean, this is nuts. Steve Giustino, National Action Coordinator, movetoamend.org/occupythecourts. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Tom.
Great talking with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And we'll be back with your calls and thoughts and also, I got to tell you, the Senate GOP to the House GOP, they have a message for them.
Run, run, Rudolph! Santa's got to make it to town. Santa, make him hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, Rudolph, because I'm reeling like a merry-go-round.
Welcome back for your media support group for We the People. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, this is incredible. The slapdown of the Tea Party Republicans in the House of Representatives. The Tea Party Republicans who have basically taken over the House. The House of Representatives, the lesser of the two bodies, or the lesser in power, anyway, of the two bodies, the larger in quantity, 335 members, is it? I believe it is. 335 members in the House and 100 members in the Senate. And the head of the Republicans in the Senate, Mitch McConnell got 39 Republican senators. That's out of, you know, out of 100 total members, and I think that there's 48, if my memory serves me right, Republicans in the Senate. He got 39 of them to vote for this thing, for this two-month extension of the unemployment tax cut, or of the payroll tax cut, and of unemployment benefits, and of the doc fix, so that Medicare people who, doctors who are helping people with Medicare are not getting a 27% pay cut on January 1st. He got that passed through the Senate with the Republicans all signing on. And there was a few things in there that weren't all that pleasant, but in the House, the Republicans said, no, what we want is a piece of legislation that demands that the Keystone XL pipeline be done. Not that the president make a decision about it, but that it be done. Last night I was talking with Karen Finney, who, you know, has been inside the, she's a great analyst and really understands what's going on inside the Beltway. And we were talking on television last night, and she said, you know who's the head lobbyist for the Keystone XL pipeline? And I'm like, no, I don't. I don't drink that much Kool-Aid in this town. I don't know. And not that she drinks Kool-Aid, but she just knows everybody who does. And she said, it's Grover Norquist. And I just find it amazing. I mean, I came into the studio today, and we had we got a couple TV monitors in here, and one of the networks, there's Grover Norquist talking like, you know, pontificating like he's some sort of a political commentator. The guy's a lobbyist. And he's the head lobbyist for the Keystone XL pipeline. And, of course, all the Republicans in the House have sworn his oath. They have sworn fealty or however you say that word. They've made him their you know, Lord Protector rather than the Constitution. So they want in the House, they say, well, we want a year-long extension of these things. Yeah, but what else do they want? They want to cut the number of weeks that you can get unemployment benefits from 99 weeks down to 59 weeks. They want to cut Medicare benefits. They want to make the XL pipeline happen so that Grover Norquist gets his check. I mean, it's just all this stuff that's going on. And the Republicans in the Senate know that there's no way that the Democrats in the Senate will let that happen. And so why do something stupid? So John Boehner originally negotiated the deal with Mitch McConnell and with President Obama, and they had this deal. It's a two-month extension, and during those 60 days, they'll work out something longer. And, I mean, it is an election year. It's going to get more and more difficult. And Boehner had the deal, and he comes back to the House. He says, okay, guys, we've got a great deal here. All you got to do is sign off on this thing. We can all go home for Christmas. And there's Eric Cantor with his Tea Party buddies standing behind Boehner with that shiv in his hand. And he sticks it into Boehner's back, and Boehner goes, "Whoop! What's that? Oh, we can't. We're not even going to have a vote on this thing. We're not even going to vote on the Senate bill because we've already passed our one-year extension that cuts the number of weeks that you can get unemployment benefits from 99 down to 59, and that pushes through the XL pipeline so that Grover Norquist can get his way." And unemployment and people on unemployment get screwed. You get what's going on here? So Boehner thinks that he can change the dialogue. Because, I mean, he has no choice. He's got the Tea Party Republicans are just like totally, totally ruining the Republican Party in the House of Representatives. And so he thinks, okay, the way I'll take control of this is we're going to just change the dialogue from this is about saving, you know, preserving a tax cut for middle-income Americans, low-income Americans, and extending unemployment benefits, and the doc fix so that, you know, doctors serving Medicare patients don't take a 27% pay cut. We're gonna change the dialogue from that. We're gonna point out that the Senate bill that, you know, the president wants me to sign, and now Mitch McConnell wants him to sign. He thought it was just Harry Reid, right? It's only a two-month bill, and we passed a one-year bill. And he thought everybody would buy it. NPR bought it yesterday. I played that clip for you. I think they're the only ones who did. I think everybody else figured out how incredibly bogus this is. So what's Boehner going to do? What can he do? I mean, when he's got Eric Cantor and the Tea Party Republicans in open revolt against his leadership. Frankly, if I was John Boehner at this point, and thank God I'm not, but if I was, I would just say, okay, that's it. Eric, you're the Speaker of the House. I'm going back to being the congressman from Ohio. And then let Eric Cantor deal with the Tea Party Republicans. And basically, they'd shut down the government, and they'd screw the American middle class, and they would lose the 2012 election massively. And that's the one thing that Boehner, being a good Republican, is trying to prevent. I find it all just fascinating. Just absolutely fascinating. Susan in Hilton, New York. Hey, Susan, thanks for listening. What's up?
Yes, I'm so excited to talk to you. You know when you tag your it?
Mm-hmm.
I decided one day to take you up on that.
Okay.
And now heading the Rochester division of Move On.
Oh, that's great.
And, yes, and of course the Occupy got me all excited too. So we work with them. We work with all the progressive groups around Rochester, and we'll definitely be doing something January 20th.
That's great.
For the
Occupy the courts. Oh, that is wonderful. Well, Susan, thank you for making my day. That's.
And thank you for all you do and getting us going. Got me going.
That's great. No, you're welcome. Thank and
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, and the same to you. And Merry Christmas to you. Okay. Thanks for the call. Zach in L.A. Hey, Zach, thanks for listening to KTLK. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I just kind of wanted to talk about why no one's talking about the shiny object, which is Eric Cantor and the Tea Party, being controlled by the Koch brothers and their ilk with Dick Armey. They are being controlled, and no
sure.
one's really talking. They're looking at Cantor, and they're looking at Boehner, but they're not talking about the puppet masters.
You're right. You're right. And I should have included that in my rant, because basically what's the Keystone XL pipeline all about? It's about getting oil down to Texas where oil companies can refine it and then ship it off to China. They're you know, building ships and expanding the Panama Canal so they can do that. And why does it have to go all the way to Texas to do that? Because the government of British Columbia said, no, you're not going to run it through our rainforest. And,
yep.
Because this is oil for export, from North America to Asia. And it's actually going to raise the price of oil in the United States. It's going to cost us jobs. But it's going to make a hell of a lot of money for people to refine oil in Texas. And guess who refines oil in Texas?
Yeah, well, yeah, we know who that is.
Yeah.
But one of the things I wanted to ask Bernie Sanders, too, is with the control of the Koch brothers, they could seriously, I've looked at the language of it, they could be charged with sedition. They really could. The Department of Justice had dropped the ball big time on this.
Well, what would be your basis for that charge?
Well, with their funding of the Tea Party and the Tea Party people, I mean, I know you would have to put the puzzle pieces together that they get their marching orders directly from, you know, the Koch brothers and the
yeah,
people.
But sedition is trying to bring the government down. Sedition is trying to end the government, or you know, and they're just trying to change it. They're trying to turn our government back into something like, or not even back, well, back into what it was like in the 1880s and the 1890s, you know, during the Gilded Age. You know, back to the days in the 19-teens when the Supreme Court was ruling that child labor laws were unconstitutional and 12-year-olds should be able to you know, work in factories or be prostitutes. Basically, the Supreme Court was ruling that you couldn't have a maximum number of hours in a week. The Supreme Court was ruling that safety regulations were unconstitutional. I mean, that's you know, that's what they want to take us back to, and it's or at least what many of their front groups and organizations and legislation wants to take us back to. So I don't think that's sedition, Zach. I think it's just wrong, and that's what we need to call it out. But, Zach, thanks for the call. Jack in Ridgeway, Colorado. Hey, Jack, got a minute to the break. What's up?
How you doing, Tom? Yeah,
good.
The Koch Party should be called, the Tea Party should be called the Tea Koch Party.
There you go.
Here's a 1% pledge. One Halliburton under Goldman Sachs with great riches for the few and servile freedom for the rest.
There you go.
You can change those names. It could be, you know, you can
yeah.
change the corporate names. I ran into some statements by Abraham Lincoln that justify the Occupy movement. If people would just Google Lincoln and the banks, you'll run into it there.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
he said, you know, corporations have been enthroned. an era of corruption will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until the wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic destroyed.
Yeah.
That's
and
Abraham Lincoln.
That's, well, it's attributed to Abraham Lincoln, actually, Jack. There's no primary source for that. But
The Lincoln Encyclopedia, it's a letter written to William F. Elkins.
Right. Yeah. No, okay. We'll leave it at that. Jack, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. We'll be back 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls, and we'll check in with the Talk Radio News Service here. Find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. as the drama unfolds in the House.
Oh, Hanukkah, oh, Hanukkah, the night, the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all get the horror. Gather round the tables and give you a treat.
Well, happy Hanukkah also. Welcome back. Happy holidays. And Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by the new book, Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Could Teach Us About Living in the 21st by Ellen Ratner, is on the line. Victoria, it was wonderful sitting next to you last night at the Talk Radio News Correspondents Dinner here in Washington, D.C.
Great. It was fun.
It was. It was a great Mexican meal. Good food. So what's up? What's going on in the world?
Well, there's plenty going on, and the president spoke again today on the payroll tax cut issue. Mm-hmm. He was in the South Court Auditorium, and he talked about the faction, as he referred to it, in the House of Representatives that refuses to support the compromise that was hatched in the Senate. Mm-hmm. He gave some details of the $40, as he referred to it, that will be saved, of course, by families. So there may be some folks in the House who are refusing to vote because they don't think $40 is a lot of money. And he said anyone who knows how to stretch a budget knows at the end of the week or month, $40 can make all the difference in the world. And he had a lot of people up on the stage with him to represent families who are doing exactly that. And then he proceeded to give details of people who have contacted the White House since they put out the call a couple of days ago for people to do just that. He said that they've had 30,000 people written so far, 2,000 an hour, and encouraged everyone to keep sending stories. And he talked about how important this is, and he said this is exactly why people get so frustrated with D.C. And he said that, this place become so dysfunctional that even when people agree to things, we can't do it. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
We can't afford any more games, and it's ridiculous.
I was interested to hear, to learn last night from Karen Finney that the lead lobbyist, now the House bill, pushes through the XL pipeline. And
right.
and of course, that's why it'll never make it through the Senate, and that's why even Mitch McConnell is saying, don't even bother, guys. But I was fascinated to discover from Karen Finney last night that the lead lobbyist, or the lobbyist, I guess, for the XL pipeline is a guy named Grover Norquist.
Oh, what a shocker.
Yeah. He's never identified as a lobbyist on TV. You know, he's always identified as something, you know, I guess just him. And I was like, whoa, that's interesting. Now a lot of things make sense.
And that is very interesting.
So maybe we should call them the Grover Norquist contingent. So the reason why the president is talking about $40 is that if this reduction in the payroll tax, this middle class tax cut, doesn't happen, then the average working American, and this only applies to people who make under $106,000 a year, because if you make more than that, you don't even pay the payroll tax.
Right. So it's an average family, they're saying, of about $50,000 per family would get, it's about $40.
A week less in their paycheck.
Exactly. Right. And so he gave examples of people who had written in, Joseph in New Jersey, who occasionally has a pizza night with his daughters who are 16 leaving home. Richard in Rhode Island, the extra $40 buys oil for his house for three nights. He says, and if someone doesn't think 12 gallons of oil is important, he invites them to stay in his unheated home. Peter in Wisconsin drives 200 miles each way to his father in a nursing home. It would mean three trips instead of four. Claire goes to a thrift store to get stuff for the class that she teaches at school. Without the $40, it would mean that she couldn't do that anymore.
Wow.
things like that.
Yeah, amazing. So what, I mean, it looks to me like John Boehner is absolutely in a box right now. What's he going to do?
Well, he just dug himself further into the box this morning because Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who's, you know, hammered out the deal with Harry Reid, which the Senate voted on 89-10, said this morning that the House should vote on the Senate deal. And he came up with quite a clever compromise because Mitch McConnell's a clever man. He said House Republicans sensibly want greater certainty about the duration of these provisions, while Senate Democrats want more time to negotiate the terms. He's quite sharp. We can and should do both. Working Americans have suffered enough from the president's failed economic policies and shouldn't face the uncertainty of a New Year's Day tax hike. So what he says is that the House Republicans should vote on the two-month extension and Senate Democrats should commit to forming a negotiating committee to reach a long-term agreement so everybody should get something out of it.
It's a face-saver, that's called.
A face-saver. Well, today, John Boehner and Eric Cantor rejected that, said that what we have to do is to sit down, have a serious negotiation, solve this problem, and basically said he doesn't care what it looks like. And, in fact, Eric Cantor basically gave a back slap across the face to the president for having the temerity to go Christmas shopping with his dog, Bo, invited both of them to come to the Capitol. He could bring his dog up here. We're pet friendly. And it was interesting because he was saying that the whole thing could be done in an hour, and yet a freshman said that there were major substantive differences between the two bills, which actually is true.
Yeah, yeah, like the House bill says that the Keystone XL pipeline will happen. The Senate bill says the president has to make a decision about it. The House bill says the number of weeks you can get unemployment goes from 99 down to 59. The Senate bill doesn't. The House bill cuts back Medicare benefits. The Senate bill doesn't. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Right. And so Eric Cantor is really not being quite accurate when he says it could be done in an hour.
No.
In other words, it could be done in an hour if the Democrats cave.
If everybody goes along with him.
Yes.
Yeah. Including the Republicans in the Senate who don't want to go along with him because, you know, there's some of them who are looking over their shoulders as the elections are coming up. Scott Brown being the number one guy in that particular caucus.
Yeah, with the bullseye. But then you've got to remember Eric Cantor's caption on his yearbook photo at school. I want what I want when I want it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. The selfish think that they always win, and very often they do. You know, the bullies. Yeah, but I have a feeling this time the bullies are going to lose. And
I don't think he's going to win this thing. The smart thing to do is to take Mitch McConnell's compromise.
Yeah, and call it a victory.
To do
what the senator from Vermont, George Kennan, I believe his name was, suggested Lyndon Johnson do back in the late 60s. Declare victory and bring the troops home. Yeah. Victoria Jones, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So John Boehner continues to be held. We have a hostage taking going on here in Washington, D.C., functionally speaking, politically speaking, a hostage taking. He's being held hostage by the members of the House of Representatives who are funded by and were put into office by basically the Koch brothers and Dick Armey and Grover Norquist. Grover Norquist, the lobbyist who's promoting the Keystone Pipeline. I find this amazing. Now, meanwhile, I mentioned this very briefly yesterday. I just kind of mentioned it in passing. And it deserves a lot more than that. So I want to just share this story with you. And then we'll pick up some of your calls here as well. And by the way, Hanukkah Samecha and Merry Christmas and Happy Yule and Festivus for all of us. And what am I missing here? Happy Kwanzaa? And in any case, happy holidays. It's really a marvelous time of the year. It's the, connect with family time of year, I think, as much as anything else. And this is the connect with family part kind of implies a home. And this was published by the BBC 3 days ago, BBC News. And the headline is, homeless people die 30 years younger, studies suggest. Now, just think about that for a minute. 30 years. The report for the charity, homeless people in England die 30 years younger than the national average, research has suggested. And I think that we could probably extrapolate that to the United States. It says the report for the charity crisis found an average homeless person has a life expectancy of 47 years compared with 77 years for the general population. They went on to note that for women, it was even lower. The mean age of death for women was found to be 43 years if they were homeless. And we here in the United States, we have 1 million children who are homeless. And homeless people die 30 years earlier than people who are not. They say it was not just people sleeping in the streets who were studied. The wider homeless population, which included those who live in night shelters, hostels, and who use day centers, were also included in the study. Researchers found that homeless people were 9 times more likely to commit suicide than the rest of the population, 3 times more likely to die in accidents. One of the researchers said it is shocking but not surprising that homeless people are dying much younger than the general population. Life on the streets is harsh, and the stress of being homeless is clearly taking its toll. We know that many homeless people have acute and often multiple health needs. In England, in the United Kingdom, and this is where they did the study, this was, as I said, the BBC is reporting this, they have 69,846 children in England who have to live in hostels, bed and breakfasts, and refuges. That figure compares to more than 112,000 in 2007, so things have gotten better in the UK. They've got 69,000 children in these circumstances. They're horrified by it. Average lifespan of a homeless man, 47, a homeless woman, 43. They have, in the UK, 69,800 kids who are homeless. We have over 1 million. Can you imagine? I mean, we've reached the point where half our population now is either in poverty or living under circumstances that are considered economically distressed. As in, like, every single penny is accounted for at the end of the month and there's still not enough to dig out of the hole. Forget about setting money aside. Lose your job and within a month or two, you are homeless. This is America now. There was another headline I saw this morning that in the United States, our population growth is down where it was in the 40s. What was going on in the 40s? We were fighting World War II. So it's quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. Meanwhile, when a poor guy robs a rich guy, he goes to prison, right? Especially if there's a racial difference. Black person walks up to a white person on the street, says, "Give me your wallet." The white person gives him their wallet, calls a cop. That black person is going to end up in jail. And maybe for a long, long time. But if a white bankster goes to a black family and says, "Sign this document and I'll make several thousand dollars more from you than I would make from a white family, because I'm not going to tell you that you qualify for a prime mortgage. I'm just only going to tell you about the subprime mortgage, the exploding mortgage. That's what I'm going to sign." If that happens, that white person never goes to jail. In fact, that, and presumably mostly white, shall we say, the banksters who work for Countrywide, which is now owned by Bank of America. So this is Bank of America's problem. The Justice Department found, in fact, they were doing this to people of color intentionally to make money, ruining families, devastating families. I mean, when an exploding mortgage blows up because, you know, they were sold a mortgage where, well, yeah, the interest rate is going to be really low for 2 years and then it can rise. But don't worry because, you know, you can always refinance. And then the market goes to hell and you can't refinance anything. And your home is underwater. And suddenly your monthly payments double because your interest rates just went up. Or it was interest only for the first year. And then, it, you know, whatever. All these shady, tricky, weird mortgages just to get people into houses. And it blows up on them. And now they are homeless. Or now they can't make the payments. And these are the kind of stresses that lead to emotional, physical, mental, marital crises. So, anybody going to jail over it, you know, among the banksters who robbed people of color? Well, the Justice Department, I mean, they actually investigated it. They had criminal investigators investigate it. They said, yep, these banksters robbed people of color. They targeted people of color and robbed them. We're not going to send them to jail, though. They're rich people. Come on, you don't send rich people to jail. So Bank of America is going to pay a $345 million fine to make it go away. Here's a few million dollars. Yeah, we made billions. And they got bailed out. They got trillions. Oh, maybe not that bank, but $7.7 trillion the Fed was passing out to banksters all over the world. And actually, on second look, it looks like it might have even been $13 trillion. Keep in mind, the GDP of the entire United States is in the neighborhood of $15 trillion. So here we have, I mean, it's not just two Americas, the rich and the poor. It's three Americas. It's the poor, the rich, and the rich who have a corporation to front for them. Because if you've got a corporation to front for you, you can commit pretty much any kind of crime you want and never go to jail. You just pay a fine. I'm guessing if a rich guy walks into a grocery store and steals a candy bar, they might get arrested. Oh, they're not going to go to jail. But poor people? I mean, we've got three criminal justice systems in this country. That's nuts.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, and a caller called in to say, I forgot to say, happy winter solstice. It starts today, in fact. Happy winter solstice. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you as we go into the end of the year here. It's our end of the year annual fundraiser for the New England Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School, which are, both in the same place and serving largely the same population. SalemChildrensVillage.org and HuntersSchool.org. And programs that, there are a number of charities that I support and that I'm on, a couple of them that I'm on the boards of or that, you know, I participate with or contribute to, but this is one that's really close to me because my wife Louise and I started this in 1978. And the story of our starting it, in fact, is in my new book, The Tom Hartman Reader. And Barrett Kohler, the publisher, has donated several cases of these books to the Hunter School to give away to anybody who makes a contribution of $250 or more between now and the end of the year to Hunter School. We're trying to raise $20,000. We're trying to use some of this for upgrading the facilities there and just, you know, general good stuff, and some of it for scholarships for kids for our summer program who couldn't otherwise afford to participate in the summer program when the school districts don't pay for kids and whatnot. Here's a letter, and so it's, you know, and you can get the information at hunterschool.org, and also there's a link on our homepage at tomhartman.com to that. To make a donation either by PayPal or you can mail a check in. The address is there. Here's a letter from one of the parents of one of the kids who went to Hunter School. Hunter School specifically, We started this school a decade and a half actually after we started the Children's Village. And the problem was that our kids were not being well served in the public school. And this is not a slam on the public school. These kids were kids who couldn't make it in school after school after school, and in some cases in home after home after home. And so we started a school just for these really challenged kids. Most of them have diagnoses of things like Asperger's or ADHD or oppositional defiant disorder or severe behavioral disorders or, you know, those kind of things. Here's one. This is from a mother by the name of Diane. She gives us permission to share her letter. She said, "Our son has been struggling for years. He's been diagnosed with Asperger's and ADHD, which have been extremely challenging for him and the whole family. He has been suspended out district multiple times and recently hospitalized because he just couldn't handle things anymore. He is only 9 years old. We tried all avenues, mainstream as well as alternative approaches. He has been through countless evaluations, counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, medications, homeopathic therapies, acupuncture, and many more with no success. Desperate and faced with the recommendation of a residential program for our child, we reached out and found, we researched and found the Hutter School. We found that there are very few options for someone of our child's age with his particular issues," which is true. It's really tough for these kids who have these conditions. "The place the few that we found were more of a punitive approach, which was not what was needed for our child. Through the Hunter School, we were introduced to Michael Simonson, who is one of the people who works there. He's doing some workshops. They're coming up in January, February, March, and April. You can find the information over at hunterschool.org on how to work with these kids. We call them energetically sensitive kids. He said, we as a family have always practiced meditation, Reiki, and energy work, but have never found someone like Michael. In just one short month of working with us and our child, we have been given our son back. When he started, he had extreme outbursts, was negative, depressed, and talking about their son, and never showed any type of emotion, not even a smile. In the past month, he's been going to school every day. He is happy. In the past weekend that we spent with him, he was smiling and showing, in quotes, real and, in quotes, appropriate emotion. As a mother who has not seen this in her son for 6 years, it is huge. We are really very grateful to the Hunter School for providing this critical piece to the success of the children who attend. Thank you for giving us our son back." This is a small organization running on a really lean budget. In fact, things were so tight this year that, and this is one of the reasons we're hoping that we can actually go over our $20,000 goal this year, because our staff actually took a 5% pay cut right across the board, all the staff people, because school districts are cutting back. People were paying us late. It's just, you know, it's a tough time. It's a tough year. It's a tough economy. And it's just extraordinary work that's being done there. So our annual, the Tom Hartman Program's annual, our charity, as it were. I know, you know, some people have their programs that, you know, Sean Hannity has some military thing or whatever. Not that, like, I'm trying to be like him or whatever. What I'm saying is, you know, it's not unusual for people on radio or TV to say, to dedicate some time. And we're doing that this week, saying, please go to hunterschool.org with a $250 or greater donation. They'll send you an autographed copy of my new book, The Tom Hartman Reader. But more important, you're helping save some kids. That's a really, really vital thing. And there's a link on our homepage at tomhartman.com. And, of course, hunterschool.org is easy enough to remember. And or salemchildrensvillage.org, which is the companion organization. From the website at Hunter School. At Hunter School, our students discover how to leverage their unique approach to learning, because they really do learn in a unique way. And in a way that most people just don't understand. Most most schools are not set up to handle. They conquer negative behaviors and build self-esteem. They live in harmony with those around them. This is a vegetarian program. It's a program that is, which, you know, may or may not be your thing, but, you know, our idea was good, clean food and a violence-free environment. In fact, we don't have television either. And the the program, and it's out in the woods. I mean, it's 130 acres in a, you know, on a 2,000-acre lake, and surrounded by tens of thousands of acres of, I mean, the forest goes all the way up to the Arctic Circle from this place in northern New Hampshire. It's just beautiful. And I mean, as I said, Louise and I started it. We lived there for 5 years. And it's approved by the state of New Hampshire's Department of Education and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just, it's a good program. So check out hutterschool.org, please, and contribute whatever you can here at the end of the year to help these kids and also to get some scholarship money for our summer program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, the police are fighting the Justice Department. Citizens United violates the Protection Clause and the XL Pipeline, among other calls. We'll pick up right after this. That would be the good, the bad, and the very phonophobically ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good, Americans for Safe Access. The Medical Marijuana Advocacy Group just released a new iPhone app to coordinate activists around the country. The app keeps up to date any news regarding local, state, and federal medicinal marijuana laws, and it also gives users access to a legal hotline and lists businesses that support Americans for Safe Access. As the group's executive director, Steph Scherer, said, we have to be innovative if we want the widespread public support that exists for medical marijuana to translate into concrete results. Excuse me. The ASA Advocate app will help put together greater pressure on all levels of government to adopt sensible medical marijuana policies. End of quote. Well done. Now, that's what I call grassroots activism. A terrible pun. The bad, Donald Trump, once again tooting his own horn. The Donald went on GOP TV to hype his fictional run for president by arguing that a third-party candidate like himself could beat President Obama. Trump said, quote, all right, third-party candidate could come in my opinion, and win. If it's somebody like me, I think I'd get Hispanic votes. Frankly, I think I'd do great with the African-American votes, end quote. All right, because African-American voters are really drawn to the Donald's year-long race-baiting crusade for the president's birth certificate. But no worry, Trump. The hair plug vote is all yours. And the very, very ugly Eric Bolling. While hosting his nightly TV show on Fox Business last night, GOP TV talking head Eric Bolling figured it would be a good idea to turn his studio into a gun show. He hosted several guests to talk about the benefits of concealed weapon permits, and each one of them thought it would be best to show instead of tell, so they all whipped out their handguns on air to prove just how easy it is to conceal a deadly weapon. That's right. The Fox News studio was full of gun toters. No wonder everyone there seems so paranoid. That's very, very ugly. That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. Somebody in the chat room says, do I endorse everything said by the chat room? Well, of course. We have the smartest minds on earth in the chat room, except the occasional one who isn't, and I don't endorse that. But the rest, absolutely. Jerry in New Leipzig, North Dakota. Jerry, you have some disconcerting news for us?
Well, I've seen all kinds of pipe on the rail sightings throughout the Dakotas and Montana, and I can only presume it's Keystone. So I also presume this is pretty much a done deal, and we're going to get to watch the Kabuki Theater play out in Congress.
Are you looking at pipe that's like 3 and 4 foot diameter, or is
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
3 and 4 foot diameter. So that's pretty much, there's nothing you can do with pipe that size except make an oil pipeline out of it.
Right. And we've got the Bakken and some other oil plays out here that they want to mix with that stuff out of the tar sands, and
right,
that way it'll flow easier to Texas.
Right. Amazing. Well, Jerry, thanks for the info.
Yeah, well, we get to watch him play it out in Congress.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see how it all works. But, you know, learning that Grover Norquist is the lobbyist behind Keystone XL is rather depressing, too, because all the Republicans, of course, they're terrified of this guy. He could destroy any of them, and they know it. So, Jerry, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Sushi in our chat room, calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, speaking of the chat room. How you doing?
Hey, Tom. Ellen Ratner was, and I guess the White House is talking about what $40 a week means to a family, like a bag of groceries or a tank of gas to get to work.
Yep.
But what they're not talking about is that $40 is not going to be in the pocket of every customer that walks in the door to our small business or even to the big businesses.
Right.
And that's going to add up to thousands.
Yeah.
And it's also going to add up an awful lot for sales taxes for states.
Well, this is why the Republicans don't want people to get a middle-class tax cut, because they know that if they do, it'll stimulate the economy. And they don't want the economy stimulated in the year before the election, because if the economy's in the tank going into November 2012, people are more likely to vote against the president.
Yeah, all for a 3% tax on millionaires.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So she very, very well said, thank you very much, and give my very best to everybody in the chat room. Thanks for the call. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hey, my friend, how are you doing, and how are you doing with that chemotherapy?
Brother Tom, nurse just unhooked it from me there a while ago. I had 2 days. It's in remission. Thank God.
Okay.
I'd like to wish happy holidays to all religions out there. To seek your higher power for peace.
Yep.
Okay. And, you know, the banksters, they targeted everybody. White, black, you know, that green was their caller they were seeking out. And, you know, I noticed something when I was at the cancer center the other day, that in the bathroom, on the walls, it said Georgia Pacific on the toilet paper dispenser,
right,
and a paper towel dispenser.
Oh, that's Koch Brothers,
you know,
company.
Fancy ones you run your finger across on electric, makes it come out.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, the Koch Brothers, didn't they give like $500 million to a cancer center or something?
I have no idea. It wouldn't surprise me. They do a fair amount of philanthropy, but Georgia Pacific is their
TV.
Company. So.
I've seen it on Link TV.
Uh-huh.
They did.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's probably the case, you know.
You think they feel a little guilty or something about...
about the cancer that comes from their refineries and their paper operations? I don't know, Sam. I just it's hard to know the heart of another person, and when you start speculating, what was it Jesus said? You know, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. I'm definitely not without sin. So
one more thing I want to say, please.
Yes, sir.
I got a wonderful letter from Michelle Obama, our first lady, last month.
Mm-hmm.
She's such a bright, attractive person.
Yeah.
I mean, President Obama is very lucky to have her.
Yeah, and I agree. And she's a genius lawyer too. I mean, she really knows what she's doing, and clearly a very, very good mother. Sam, thank you. I wish you the very happiest of holidays. Merry Christmas. May it be wonderful, and may your cancer stay in remission for the rest of your life. And give my very best to you, the nurse and your doctors and your family and everybody else. Thanks for calling in. Okay.
God bless you.
You too, sir. You too. Thank you very much. Well, that was, Sam told us just on the air. I mean, he's been calling in for years, and just a few months ago he calls and says, bang, I've got cancer. What are we going to do? And off he goes. I mean, it's amazing how fast lives can change. Clifford in Ishpeming, Michigan. Hey, Clifford, what's up?
Yeah, well, I was watching CNN last night, and I watched Boehner, trying to make a hero out of himself.
Right.
You know, you want to do a year instead of this is one of, this is what we have to do one way or another. We've got to separate these bills. You know, the pipeline has nothing to do with the tax break.
Well, it does in that the tax guy is Grover Norquist and the pipeline lobbyist is Grover Norquist.
Well, I realize that. But what I'm saying is that it should be debated either in the EPA or debated whether or not it's good for our energy.
Well, of course.
But this has nothing to do with this, and they throw it in. Most people never, ever, ever know about it until they're hit with it.
Yeah.
And we've got to try. The Democrats are no different. They push these things through too. They're all at fault.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the things I've always said. If you, one thing at a time, and if it isn't worth voting on, don't bring it up.
Yep. Yep.
And that's just the way it should be.
I agree.
And one thing I'd like to say about President Obama. I've been a little bit disappointed. And he started out. He won when, you know, his slogan was, yes, we can. Well, he won, but I'll tell you what, you know, he's waffled and everything else, and now I think he's got to give Boehner some credit, and he's got to tell him not only no, but hell no, and stand up, we won.
Yeah, well, that's what he's doing right now, and let's hope that he holds to it, because he's got the high, he's got the moral high ground, he's got the political high ground, and
well, I sure hope so.
I do too, Clifford. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll see how it plays out, but I think that I think he's got a spine here, and you know, and President Obama has a significant list of accomplishments that he's going to be running on. Jim in Cheney is
yep.
The name
Cheney
of your town is Cheney.
Yeah, it's just
you
south
poor guy.
Spokane, Washington.
Oh, hi. Okay, you got my sympathy.
Yeah,
what's up?
I just wanted to ask your opinion. I write lots of editorials and write my congressman, and one of the things I'm really feeling strong about is this amendment to the Constitution. But I think we ought to be amending Article 3 of the Constitution to reflect the people's house having the power. That was what the
it's already there.
Wanted.
It's already there.
And
Article
so
3, Section 2. It says the Supreme Court shall operate under regulations established by Congress.
Exactly. And we need to have an amendment, say Amendment Number 28, that says that the Congress, the People's House, can override decisions made by the Supreme Court the same way they could the president with two-thirds majority.
But see, we don't need that as a constitutional amendment. They could simply do it right now. It's just that there has never been a Congress that had the courage to do it, and the last president who tried to do that was Franklin Roosevelt. And he got halfway into it with his court packing scheme, you know, regulating the number of people on the court and how many votes they would have. And he so frightened them. The composition of the court didn't change in 36, 37, but suddenly the court started deciding in his favor instead of against him because he'd so frightened them. But he didn't accomplish what he was trying to do because in part because of the blowback, but I think in part because of what was going on in Europe as well. Jim, thanks for the call, though. I we do need to do something with the court.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And isn't it bizarre that Newt Gingrich has chosen to make that the centerpiece of his campaign? I keep finding myself agreeing with Newt. How weird is that?
From the war against disorder.
Helping you in the water cooler wars. Welcome back. Happy holidays. Tom Hartman here with you. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle with reporting on the Occupy movement. Mark, what's going on in Seattle?
Hey, happy solstice, Tom, to
well, you
and your family. You.
Happy solstice to you and your family as well. Tonight's the night, in fact.
I also want to give a shout-out to all my friends on the Pacifica Radio Network because I've been a reporter for Free Speech Radio News for years, and it's a great group of people.
That's great. We are syndicated by Pacifica as well as by Dow Global and Free Speech TV, so that's great.
Yeah,
so what's up?
Actually, Free Speech Radio is one of the only news organizations I know that's actually run by the reporters, so it's amazing. But, the report from Seattle is not necessarily good. The U.S. Department of Justice just finished up an 8-month investigation into the Seattle Police Department. It began with allegations of racial profiling and excessive use of force.
Mm-hmm.
There were 34 different civil rights and community organizations that got together and called for this federal investigation. Well, on Friday, U.S. Attorney Jenny Durkan actually announced their conclusion, and their conclusion, and this is a quote from the report, is that the Seattle Police Department has a systematic policy of violating the United States Constitution.
Yikes.
Yes, so it's caused a lot of controversy here. There's obviously been a lot of confrontations between protesters and police here, but the real spark for this investigation started a year ago, and that was the shooting of a Native American wood carver named John T. Williams here.
Yep.
So this is a long.
So what's
situation.
You know finding that the police are violating the Constitution, and explicitly holding them responsible, prosecuting them, or changing the nature of the police department, or, you know, demanding some sort of action are two different things. Is that second step underway?
Well, the Justice Department promised to help consult like they have with departments around the country on these issues and help reform the policies of the police department. But
that's
unfortunately,
great.
Unfortunately, though, Tom, the police chief and the police guild are standing against the federal findings, the U.S. Department of Justice findings. They're claiming that they saw the same information and have come to different conclusions. So
well,
they're
fighting
they it completely.
Yeah, of course they would. That's not a surprise, but the Justice Department, I think, is going to trump the local police department. That's fascinating. Mark Taylor Canfield, thanks for the report, Mark.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks for letting us
occupy the airwaves.
There you go. Occupy the airwaves. Thank you. Yeah, that's Larry in Kalmar, Iowa. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, well, first of all, I don't want you agreeing with Newt. I mean, we've just been bombarded with GOP ads here, and they're bashing each other. And,
oh, that's right. You're in Iowa where you're getting all the TV ads, aren't you? Yeah.
Oh, gosh, what a nightmare.
Yeah, well, Newt is saying that the courts have taken on too much power, and I've been saying that for a long time. So, but I would never vote for Newt. I could agree with one of his positions. That doesn't mean that I agree with the rest of them. Anyhow, that's not what you called about, though. You called about the XL pipeline.
Yes. Well, what they're talking about is pumping thick sludge of, I mean, this stuff isn't like the, you know, people think of oil that they put in their cars and it just runs out of the can. I mean, this you'd have to just squeeze out of the can.
It's a slurry kind of stuff.
They've got to dilute it to, it's some nasty, but it's a catastrophe waiting to happen if there's a break in that line.
Yep. And the stuff is very, very corrosive, in part just mechanically corrosive because it's got so much particulate matter in it. It's going to be like, you know, running sandpaper along the inside of those pipelines, just the mechanical part. Plus, it's got some really, really, really nasty chemicals in it.
Yeah, if people knew exactly what this stuff was, they'd be going, what, this is coming in from Canada to go across the U.S. to the Koch brothers down in Houston. You know, I mean, it's just
right.
Ridiculous.
And then to be refined into diesel fuel or gasoline and shipped off to China or other places, you know, but not for U.S. consumption. Yeah, no, you're right. It is.
Leave it to Grovert.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, leave it to Grovert. Well said. Larry, thanks a lot for the call. Lee in Reed Point, Montana. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, saw you on Fox News. Good job.
Oh, thank you. I'll be on tonight, too.
Cool. About that sand going through the pipeline, they don't pump sand down through there because it would plug it up.
No, I didn't mean sand literally, but there is, you know, this slurry from the stuff that it would go through this pipeline. It has more particulate matter. It's much more abrasive than normal oil.
Well, they'll mix it with the backing fluid and send it out, but they talk about the Ogallala aquifer.
Right.
There's about 200,000 oil wells drilled right through that, been drilled through it for years.
Uh-huh.
And then they talk about going across the rivers and streams. Across them, they have to be a double pipeline, and they're going to concrete it in.
So you think everything's going to be just fine with this?
Well, I spent 27 years in the oil field. I think it can be done and done environmentally right.
But why bother? Why do it?
Well, we need it. We have to have it.
That's not for us.
If we don't burn it.
It's for China.
If we don't burn it, China will.
But that's where it's going to begin with. This isn't for us. This oil is not intended for U.S. consumption.
Well, we'll clean it up, though. We'll run it through our refineries.
Right. We get the pollution from the refining process.
We're going to have oil, though, from a friendly source, don't you think?
I think that if we took that money and we spent it, I mean, as Bernie pointed out earlier, you know, Texas right now is generating 10 nuclear power plants worth of electricity from just wind power. That if we invested in alternative energy instead, we'd be so much better off. You can see me tonight on Fox Business, Power and Money at 9 p.m. on PolitiFact's Lie of the Year. I'm going to tell them about Medicare Part E, everyone, and kick their butts on it. Hopefully, we'll see. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there and get active. Tag, you're it. Occupy something. We'll see you soon. Have a great, happy holidays.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.